charge the Ion Accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beyond the Bell, Lost Souls Podcast. Tonight I'm joined by Red Powell.
What up?
Red, how are you?
I'm doing awesome.
We missed you.
It's great to be back. Yeah, I know, missed you guys.
Tonight's just you and I.
Special time. Red and Paul, special time.
Anyway, so we're obviously going to talk about lore, we're going to talk about models, we're going to talk a lot about the Horus Heresy, and I guess the Siege of Terra by proxy. No spoilers. No spoilers during the course of this podcast. And, you know, some little news, too. Like, big news. We've seen some stuff about the new Age of Sigmar.
Oh, man. Yeah.
With that, talking about every single war scroll is changing. Of course, there's going to probably be some rules updates. And basically... you know, what you need to know is that there's a bunch of stuff coming. That's
awesome.
Going to be some stuff talked about, I think what they mentioned in an event in the U.S. Open Series in Dallas, which I'll be there, by the way.
Oh, nice.
And Nottingham. I will not be there.
Shame. Have you made it out there before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Man, I have not. And that's on the list. I really got to get out there. I would love to just see that, you know, the legendary home of Warhammer.
It is pretty special, especially being super fan, you know, is that you can go and kind of see where it all started. And if you get to London, it's not that hard to get to Nottingham. You go to, like, I think it's King's Cross Station and take a train that basically takes you directly to Nottingham. And once you get off the train, it's a 5-minute cab ride, Uber ride to Warhammer World. Mm. There aren't really any hotels around there, but actually in Nottingham proper, there are a few hotels. I say in proper, like, I know downtown Nottingham. Also, that's in downtown Nottingham near Nottingham Castle, which is also neat.
Sounds cool.
There's a statue of Robin Hood there. There's a pub that says it claims to be the oldest pub in the UK or London. I think maybe those are not London, England. A yield trip to Jerusalem. It certainly seems old, but most things over there do compare to stuff over here. But the ceilings are very short, which is interesting, because they're carved out, you know, of the rock itself.
Yeah,
but it's a cool place. But inside of Warhammer World, you again, super. If you're in London and you can use a day on your trip, you can get to Warhammer World and back. Like, the trains run there and back. You can go up there early in the morning and then take the train back. Most of the time, there's one, you know, in the evening that will get you back to London.
All man, I gotta make it. Yeah.
And then at Bugman's.
I hear that's really cool.
You can play games there, so now they have tables. They have tables. There's their food and beverages. The plaque where all the Warhammer heroes are listed is in Bugman's.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know they'd put it up there.
Yeah, a new group of heroes just got inducted, like today, at the time of this recording.
I saw that news. I love that stuff, man. I love that community built and the people that they're recognizing. I think it's really great.
I mean, as far as I know, those are, you know, nominated by you know, people that have been impacted by their efforts out there.
Yeah, by the people, for the people. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is nice. And they also awarded some posthumous awards as well, which is the first time that's happened. And had the pleasure of meeting both of those individuals, even working with one of those individuals over this last couple of years. And well deserved, you know, untimely passings, and they are definitely missed. But, you know, the impact they had on people and their efforts in their areas, you know, I just have firsthand experience of that.
Me too, man. And they're going to be missed, having met them. And I know exactly just the impact that some people have on the community can be so remarkable, and what they do. And there's so many people out there. This recognition that GW has done is I think it's extremely special. And it shows that, you know, you'll hear people talk about in the background that, you know, at the end, it's a company that it has to make money. And, like, okay, yeah, I get it. But at the, like, this kind of effort and this kind of community and recognizing the heroes out there, it's like one of those philosophical things where you're like, well, there's no such thing as an altruistic act. This money's, you know, they're just out there for money. But no, this is really special. And taking the time to do this, they have gone out of their way for some of this, and I really appreciate it.
Exactly. Congratulations to all the inductees. You know, so they will get their name enshrined there, which is cool, because it is, you know, something that people come and see. And I see a lot of people posting pictures when they're there, and they see one of the people that impacted them. You know, they'll always post on social media that, you know, like, hey, check this out, guess where I'm at. You know, this is, and it's special to them to see that recognition on the wall. So in this episode, I also want to talk about my time at Adepticon this year, hot off the heels of that.
Man, I wish I could have gone so bad. I mean, I've only been once so far, and I had the best time there. It's Adepticon's such a, and you've been several times, right?
Basically for the last 15 or so years, I think maybe more.
I mean, it's a thing. I like that was my one time going, and ever since then, it's just like going to Nova. It is a marked event. It is a thing. And the fact that like Golden Demon was there and all of the different aspects that Adepticon includes, man, I really wish I'd been able to go and hang out with you and Adam, but it looked like y'all were having a blast from where I was watching from afar.
Oh, thanks for checking it out. Yeah, if you were curious and want to see some of the action from Adepticon, check us out on the Games Workshop Twitch page, where we did live streaming from the event and covered Age of Sigmar on day one, Kill Team Doubles on day two, and then the 40K team tournament, four person team tournament on day three and four, and it was a blast. We can talk about that after the break of the show because I want to jump into some of this Horus Heresy, Siege of Terra slash stuff.
Oh, snap. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, just as consumers, you know, like where do we go now?
Oh
What's
my gosh.
next?
I mean, you know, the cover of the book is, or at least various, like for the end and the death, you know, one of them is definitely the Golden Throne, right? And like, I really feel like in a metaphorical sense, we have ascended and essentially done everything you could possibly do. We've taken the mythos. They've put it on paper. We now know how the fight goes down exactly. And I just got to say, because I haven't had a chance to splurge on this, I was blown away. I finished it much faster than I thought I would, only because I couldn't stop listening to my audiobook.
Page turning, you know.
Oh man, just
I'm
kept
glad you
going.
brought it up. I have a subscription to Audible. What am I supposed to use it for now?
I know, man. Like, I mean, the nice thing is, I'll be honest, I started listening to like I started picking up some of the others just 'cause to this point, like what's next? Like where do you go? I'll tell you right now, the next like in kind of chronological sense, the you know, the Beast series, have you had a chance to read those?
I have not, but I've heard a lot about them.
I think it's a great little jump and I tell you, there's plenty of them, right? So there's plenty to keep going into. It's the Beast series. When I first picked it up, I didn't really understand what I was getting into, but the time frame is not so far removed.
That's
just
like
sit,
34K or
it
something,
is,
isn't
yeah.
it? I mean,
It's about 4,000 years in the future, and there's still ties from some of the things that you've read in the Horus Heresy and Siege of Terra stuff, which is what again the continuity of this makes it so enthralling in a lot of ways. Because some of the stuff, you know, you are reading something 4,000 years in the future, and as things start to happen, and then they start to interconnect, and you're like, oh, snap. And then, of course, the Beast finished before the Siege of Terra did, and so you've got this ability by the writers to continue to tie things in. It just, you know, that's somewhere I would look at. I'd also suggest, especially, you know, we talked about Age of Sigmar and the new edition coming out. I always like the old times and the end times of the old fantasy world. That's a wonderful series to look at. But man, I mean, back to this, the Siege of Terra, like the ending is it is so good and so like worth the read just to be brought into it. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of back and forth and you know, well, I you know, you wish it'd gone one way. I mean, everybody
I think it's
might
almost
well.
impossible to not have a strong opinion about some of these story
Absolutely.
elements. And
Right.
so, you know,
Nobody
again,
wanted
no spoilers.
Sanguinius to die, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, nobody wanted that, Paul, but it had to happen. I'm sorry they couldn't retcon that for you.
Hey, never say never. You know,
Yeah,
the
no
pen is
spoilers. I
mightier
appreciate
than
you
the sword.
stopping me from that. But
But I think it's reading it was definitely well written,
oh, yeah.
and there are some story elements in there that I, you know, I'll, safely say some left me scratching my head. But at the same time, I understand that as someone who thinks about this all the time, that of course would have generated my own opinions of how things maybe went down. And if they don't go exactly my way, then but it's still well written, that's still fine.
Yeah.
But there are some elements in it to where it really does showcase the characters in whatever, I'm going to use this in air quotes, whatever their best light is. Like some of the worst characters are the worst. I mean, evil and some of the best are the best, and then all shades in between. And you get a lot of closure on a lot of stories. And then some of them you're thinking, I just need more on this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, back to even with the Beast thing, like I was talking about the connections, there's things, especially because, being a huge fan of Dan Abnett and the master work that he's put into this, the amount of effort, I'll tell you right now that, again, no spoilers, but he has such a good way of weaving in these different elements that honestly you will find throughout just other books out there that he has written and other books across the lore that the other authors have written, because we know this wasn't just him by himself. We know there was a committee aspect to it all. He was the main author. These are his books, of course, but there's still like the whole Black Library comes up to a pinnacle here.
Yeah,
right?
And the editors and all we know, the meetings,
that's right,
story arcs and planning things out. There's his words is the writer, but it is the culmination. Much like all the shaman 8,000 years before the dawn of time to create the emperor. Maybe we'll see.
crazy.
But as far as like the wanting more, and this is pure speculation, of course, but I still think that there's room for maybe some novellas or stories or whatever from the other side of some of the characters' perspectives during those stories.
Sure. 100%. There's maybe definitely
wishful things
to build
maybe
off of that. I don't know. I don't think it's too wishful. I think it's really easy for them to jump on that.
But then, of course, you've got, if you haven't read the Black Legion novels by ADB that happened right after the Siege of Terra. Sorry,
yep.
Siege of Terra, but the conclusion of it, they've already started building that world out.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some very cool points in that. Like, if you can't get enough of some of those characters, you can almost, like, I kind of want to almost revisit them, those books, after reading this to see how it stands up and see if I notice anything. Because you're spot on. And you even mentioned a couple of those things of, like, story elements that work their way into the novel that reference or were set in books that came out years ago.
Right.
They weren't Horus Heresy books either, just
that's
other
right
40K novels.
Yep.
Yeah, masterful work. And then some of the characters. And then, I listened to it on Audible, and I really do like the narrator.
Oh, man. The narrator did a great job in the consistency throughout and just what he was able to achieve in capturing some of the characters. I try to read my kids, and when I read to my kids, I try to invoke different voices, but imagine having to do it for the length of all of that and what they were able to accomplish, right? Like, I mean, eventually at some point my voice gets cracky and I it's difficult to, I try to make the frog voice interesting versus the rabbit voice, and this dude's over here voicing Primarchs and demons and all sorts of stuff. It's just remarkable the range at which
five
he's able to operate.
Flavors of perpetuals.
It's awesome.
But to make you want to hear it, and that's talent all around, and incredibly well done. And I did. I found myself, satisfied with the conclusion, but then wanting more.
To
know some more things about some of these characters, and of course, sad. With the death of my Primarch. So.
I mean, happens. It happens sometimes. And that one was kind of a big deal. I'll tell you what, though. I mean, like, so, okay, again, no spoilers, but, like, we all know the things, right? Like, Blood Angels, it's built into their lore. Sanguinius dies. We got that. Like, that's established. I'm sorry if this is a surprise to anybody. Like, it's great lore, and I'm not ruining anything that isn't already
out
there.
Oh, no. That's well known. I mean, the four paragraphs that made up the Horus Heresy
previously, that's right,
to these novels, everyone has read probably a million times. Or,
but even then, right, like, the Blood Angels, and we talk about, like, the Black Rage or the Red Thirst and how some of those things play into it. Like, I'm just saying, how that stuff is written and what they bring to life in this book, because of course that event occurs, and we know from the Codex when you pick it up that the Black Rage is something induced because of the death of Sanguinius. Like, it was awesome. It was really awesome to see that play itself out.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. So it's kind of, I think that's about all we can say about it. Because really, once we start talking about the story, it's all...
Yep, it's like, you remember that guy that did that thing? And then it was like, wow. And then you're like, and then that other person showed up. And you're like, oh my gosh. That's like the only thing we could do at this point. So
all
you're right.
Bets are off. Maybe we could do like a Patreon only spoiler episode. I don't want to.
Oh man! Don't threaten me with a good time.
Well, at least it's behind another double click, and we can warn people before.
Yeah,
it happens.
With like the entire title is just warning, spoilers, warning. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah, we'll see about that. We'll definitely consider that. But that'd be fun to do, to kind of just let loose with some of the lore stuff. And
I have to talk about it at some point. It's gotta happen.
It's gotta get out. Yep. Or if we see this at a tournament, then we'll talk your ear off.
There you go.
Speaking of the Horus Heresy, there are just kit after kit coming down the line for either the Legion Imperialis, which is the small scale, epic scale game.
Snap.
You get to include Titans and aircraft and the troops. I mean, it's pretty cool. And then the Horus Heresy 30K is what we refer to it as game.
So, yeah, I mean, between those two, you can bring it all to life. Like they did such a good job of playing it. And you can go off in your own direction with certain things, and they've got some liberties to it. But everything that is described in an audiobook can be remade.
It's so neat. And then, seeing all these Solar Auxilia tanks come to life, what you can see is some inspiration that would eventually becomes the Astra Militarum and the, / Imperial Guard, and, having them exist all in plastic, for the most part, can get you up to speed pretty quickly, fighting against, probably what is some established Marine forces.
Right.
Certainly enjoyed seeing those. And, then I know that every time I play 30K, I am thinking narratively in my head.
I mean, and again, there's so many little things to it. And I know, like, it's like the remade 7th edition in a lot of ways, but they did such a good job of building in the nature of the legions into it that you don't just feel like it's Space Marines versus Space Marines. There's some obvious, like, common factors, but they really aren't. And the way it plays through can be played out so well, and you can lean into themes of each army and different aspects, the rites of war and how you play it. And that's awesome. I've not yet got a chance to play Legion, but I do have it, and I was very excited to get it together and get it on the table. And they do look really good. They did a really good job. And as these tanks that they've just shown on Warhammer Community and the previews and whatnot, I'm super excited for it.
I saw some excellently painted Legion Imperialis models this past weekend. I mean, it's just staggering that good painters will find a way to make things look beautiful. Of course they will, but even the tiniest of things.
Yeah.
But the miniatures also held up to it, which was nice. I guess as a gamer, and this is a philosophical question, and apologize if I'm putting you on the spot, but you've also done a lot of game theory studying.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of stuff. Do you think the nature of the rules for the Horus Heresy game help keep you rooted to that that lore element focusing on each battle?
So in a certain extent, yes. And I think a lot of it is, and I know this is, so in Horus Heresy, you don't have stratagems per se, but you do have reactions. And the reactions can be so characteristic of how it goes and some of the theories that build into it, right? So like Night Lords have this thing where if they gang up on a unit, and there's something to like the aspect of, because a Terminator counts as two models or a jump pack unit counts as two models, they can gang up on a unit easier if they have more of them based off that. It has this whole aspect to it. And then you look at the reactions that the Primarchs give, and you look at, again, game theory and like what makes something unique enough to get there. It's like they took the template of Warhammer gameplay, and you look at where Horus Heresy started, again, using 7th edition, and then they added on these aspects, like how do we make this unique enough that it plays off in its own direction? And I do think in the crafting of Horus Heresy, I really do think it is its own game enough that it is not merely Warhammer 40K with 30K superimposed on top of it. I don't think you could just say, well, I'm going to play 30K like I play 40K, and I'm going to, and you're going to go out there and do well. I don't think that's the case. You have to divest yourself a bit from it. You'll have some familiarities in relation to,
like moving miles, you know, around and building points, you know, like,
exactly some
to?
Of the stats. Yeah, exactly. Some of the stats play in, some of the points play in. There are, you know, there are independent characters. And so we know that, you know, Warhammer had stepped away from characters that could join units for a little bit. And now we're back to the point where characters are leaders of units, but, Horus Heresy has had that kind of concept the whole time. And so, there are some similarities, but when you talk about bringing a Primarch into the fight, it just plays different because of what they offer. You know, it's funny, Gilliman isn't in 40K. Gilliman isn't that far removed from how he gives these army wide buffs, and he plays into this, that aspect, or the things you choose for the abilities that give him. Other Primarchs in 30K do something like an echo, very similar, but still more than enough to make them distinct. And so it in its own way, I do appreciate how they've played it through. I would say that, you know, as you look at Legion and the game theory that they play into that, while I haven't played it, I have gotten to playtest some of it just because I was so interested, you know, the ability to look into that rule set as we did. I had to kind of play out some of it with a friend of mine as we talked about, okay, like, what does this look like? How do you lose things? And the way you lose stuff, it does play out in a much broader scale. It's not necessarily Apocalypse, but it is playing out and that you're losing large amounts of units. Some of them could just vanish.
Yeah, the flow of combat real deadly.
It is. And the pacing of it too, because Legions is a orders based game where you put orders down. It's not like, okay, well, it's my turn, so I'm going to move everybody, then I'm going to shoot everybody, then I'm going to charge, and then I'm going to fight everybody. It is, I have 8 units, you have 12 units. Well, we're going to alternate in activating orders, but then because you have 12 units, you have 4 more orders left over at the end of it. And so you trade off like with masses of units, which have the ability to unload a what I would call an unhealthy amount of firepower, versus I've split up my units, so they may not be as hard hitting, but it gives me some flexibility in how I can order, because I'm going to have the ability to maybe move more things when you can't account for it, which has its own weight as well. So just some really interesting aspects to all that I laid out. I think it's a good question. Again, the game theory and what kind of separates them and makes them distinct.
I feel almost a little bit more of a intimate connection with how I've built the army.
Sure.
That I think helps me stick more into either whatever campaign I'm trying to imagine myself in or what I'm battling against. Because what I find, it's less of a, you know, I take all comer. I find that when I'm going to play someone, when I play Horus Heresy, is that I know what they're bringing, and I'm going to bring something that's, you know, either counter to that or at least a different loyalty legion or whatever.
Right. And that there is something to that. It's, you know, I think with 40K, and I know that with the Space Marines, there are the, you know, we've seen the Dark Angel book drop. We've got Space Marines, and you can pick up certain chapters, but really, like, the chapters don't have that same flavor like they do or they used to in previous editions of 40K, where you can just really throw whatever and then just pick a detachment and roll with it in certain regards. But the, you know, in Horus Heresy, I mean, you get locked in a certain direction, and depending on what legion you pick, or if you go with the Solar Auxilia or the AdMech or what have you. And so it's pretty interesting in how you have to lean into certain things with those builds based off of which legion you want to adhere to.
My Mechanicus, I've painted in such a way to be Dark Mechanicum if necessary.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And you know, in those must look great.
Oh, yeah, I did enjoy it. It's my same weather, like blue and brown weather color scheme. So it's gotten pretty pretty decent at it over the years.
Nice.
But now, anyway, I feel like the I do kind of feel like the rules lend itself to this different level of commitment almost, and then the game kind of plays out in a similar way. And maybe that's something in the design element. Maybe I'm imagining it. I know I feel it. So that is, there we go. Let's take a break, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Adepticon.
Awesome.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Please check out our sponsors and maybe consider checking us out on Patreon. Means a lot. Of course, if that's not your thing, please like, share, subscribe, hit those 5-star reviews. That's another way to like really easily support the show. And there's no bad way to do that. We really appreciate it. Thank you all very much, everybody. Adepticon. So Adepticon was this past weekend. It had record attendance. So I've often told people that Adepticon is about 6,000 folks, 6,000 registered folks. This time it was 8,000, probably over
8,000.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and probably north of that with all the people that just come to, you know, because you don't need a badge to walk around and, you know, take part in the vendor hall or just hang out a little bit, but you need a badge to play in the events, and that's how they do that. But yeah, there were over 8,000 registered attendees, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, just a testament to what they've built. I mean, because I know you asked or a little bit in the first part of the show, but I've been going for, I don't remember exactly what year, but I think since their fourth year, and they're on year 20 now, and it has just grown.
Wow.
And grown and grown every year. And, you know, people treat it like it's like that's their Super Bowl. You know, there's lots of events fit that role for certain people, but there's definitely the enthusiasm that this event is the if they could only go to one every year, this is the one they would choose. And it's kind of hard not to get wrapped up in the fact that there are so many people miniature gaming, you know, not just Warhammer. There's all kind of other events there. But largely it's just around mini gaming, and there are so many people there doing it. It is a blast. The lot, there's a nice bar area in the near the lobby. There's actually two bar areas and then a big open space in between those with tables and stuff that are always have people in them playing games. I played a couple of board games, you know, while we were there. I got to get out and see some of the sights. Did hit Kuma's Corner.
Nice.
Did hit the like a Ghostbusters themed speakeasy, which was a little bit ways away from the event, but had to break out, had to get out there and go check it out, because, you know, how often do you get to do something like that? And then did a lot of talking about Warhammer. So Adam Camilleri and myself, and of course the team that we have there behind the scenes, did the shoutcasting for Age of Sigmar, Kill Team, and then 40K the whole weekend. It was a blast. Got to see some amazing armies, got to see some great plays, and talk about it and hang out with people in the chat and that kind of stuff, which is an incredibly fun time.
Sounds awesome, man.
Then of course there was the Golden Demon.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad they shared this stuff. I mean, as they were showing it, and I saw the one that won the I wish I could see this thing in person.
The Slayer
Sword? Won. Yes. Oh my gosh. That, like, I saw that, I guess, when it was being entered before the results were announced, and I would have put money on that thing because it was so good.
Same.
It is out of control, dude.
So this miniature is a vampire walking through like a swamp, and did I just describe it in the worst way possible?
That's like one of those games, like the game shows where they're like, here's the prompt, and it's like super obscure. But yeah, I thought it is still appropriate.
So walking through the swamp, and he's walking over like a very clear pond or something. And in the pond is the vampire's reflection, except going with the idea that vampires don't cast reflections. It's built basically sandwiched on top of each other. It's like they're walking on top, the sheer reflection going down, going vertically down from the painted miniature. There's another whole painted diorama under it, which is the reverse, except there's no vampire. It's only his clothes and his armor walking, and there's spirits down there, and you can clearly tell it's a different type of environment. Like, it's, you just got to check it out.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah.
But seeing it, I'm like, oh, that was really good. You know, I'm not a judge or anything, but I certainly don't envy the judges having to decide between some of the entries and the various different categories. But I think seeing this one, you could kind of tell maybe where their head and hearts were at with that. There was a Hedonite of Slaanesh also that was, I mean, look, beyond flawless, if you ask this, you know, non-painter's opinion.
It's crazy, dude. I don't know how the judges are able to, I mean, just in every aspect. I love how many different aspects they had, right? Like there were a lot of different areas in which you could enter in, and just model by model units. So I see single miniature for 40K unit or kill team, 40K large miniature vehicle. I mean, and the stuff that has been submitted, just mind-blowing. I remind myself constantly looking at these things just how much, I mean, while aspiring, I am still just such an amateur.
It is kind of hard not to be humbled, yeah, by some of this magnificence.
It is humbling.
But talking to some of the painters, you know, like, you ask them, like, how on earth did you do this? And they say, it just takes time. That's what a lot of them say with this. It just takes time. So now I'm not saying that give me 10,000 hours. I'm still not creating that thing.
Right.
So, I mean, they definitely have some artistry, but it is nice to know that, you know, that time that everyone has, you know, or can try to have is an element, you know, so you can check one thing off. But the inspiration, it's like, would you have ever even thought to do some of the things that they challenge themselves to do?
I mean, right.
That's another aspect. But just walking around, there was always a line around the Golden Demon of people wanting to see these great works. I walked by there, the closest I'll ever be to a Golden Demon statue. They were the photographers and the people working the booth were just taking it incredibly seriously. They are, you know, wearing gloves not to damage anyone's entry and being so careful at just respectful of the artist, of everyone who entered something in any category. And there is a Youngbloods category.
Yeah, I was seeing as I look at this. At first, just before I get to the Youngbloods category, I have to say the Horus Heresy, just because I do play Iron Warriors, and it is a Perturabo who took the Horus Heresy gold. David, the effort that he put into modding this and making this thing is remarkable, because I am familiar with this model. I've used it in so many different cases, and looking at it, what he added, missiles, a new helmet, a different kind of hammer, it is beautiful.
Are you checking it out on the Warhammer community site?
Yeah, Warhammer community, looking at it right now. The thing, it's just, I can't believe, I couldn't imagine seeing this thing in person. Just how good that must have looked. Right? Like, I'm telling you, I don't know, man. I wouldn't have made it. But
there is, when you look at some of these models, use the Hedonite as an example, because it's, you know, in your mind, you know how big that model is.
Right.
It's not big.
I know. It's not. And the amount of detail, even with the photography that they were able to capture on it, it's like, dude.
Yeah. Find me a brushstroke on that model.
Right.
You're not going to. And then you walk around, you see this, like, how is this stuff even humanly possible? Like, what products are they using that allow them to do this?
Right. Well, and then you get down to the Youngbloods, like you were talking about. Man, they did some awesome work. Some of this stuff, like, I'm looking at the silver is one of the Horus Heresy Chaos Knight characters, and it is so good, man. Like, if that's the Youngbloods, I'm once again humbled and out of my league. Like, I'm not there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Look, this truly talented people, and it's cool to have that showcase. Like, the Golden Demon was something that people aspire to, and it's cool to have it back. And I think this year they even, like, awarded people notice that they were, like, almost, you know, in the running, to kind of let them know where they were at with their entry and maybe where their journey is as a painter. So I know that people were quite happy to get that nod, even if they didn't come away with one of the major awards. So it's a process. I know people are probably already started on their entries for next year. But there's hundreds of entries and just truly spectacular works, and it makes you, you know, like, just you stand there just in awe, figuring out how on earth did they do this. Some of the big wins for tournament wise is Tao came away as winning the singles.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, this is pre-Codex Tao.
Pre-Codex. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So
good for them. good for them.
Yeah, so some of the things that they were using, will not be the same. So, you know, we talked a bit about the towel already. And so there's lots of cool things that you can do, but some of the things they were doing will not be the same. But that's all right. Generals just find new ways to achieve things. But it was just interesting to see that codex or that index that had not historically been doing that those types of results to pull down the W in a big event. And I'm, of course, played by a great player. So there's, you know, the skill of the pilot definitely matters. But seeing an index pull down a victory in a field that large is pretty cool, if you ask me. We'll see if the Codex can deliver similar results once that thing launches.
Yeah.
On the team side of things, it's basically like a pageant. It's the best way to describe it. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Like sometimes you may have heard in the distant past of us kind of referring to some tournaments as pageants in a way that's like, you know, wait, I'm supposed to be here for winning games, and why is somebody winning with a 3-2 record? Well, the truth is, you know, most tournaments will publish what their path to criteria to victory is. And, you know, if you are there to compete, you have to compete on whatever it is they're describing. But a lot of that times they'll be the best general and like the best overall, you know, awards that I find, you know, I think that the best of any category, if you can win any of those, you've won the tournament. That's always been my my theory on that, how I approach things. So if your best sport, your best appearance, best general, you know, our best combination of all those things, granted, you're equal winners with everyone else. Can award however you want at an event. That's what I think is cool sometimes. But at Adepticon, team tournaments, without question, the number one placing is the one that combines every aspect of their event into one thing. You've got to have good team spirit. You've got to have good team theme. You've got to play decently well. You've got to be great sports. Everything contributes to the winners of the overall. And everyone is cool with that. That's kind of the way it goes. So no different this year. Some absolutely awesome armies. This year, I do have one critique, is that, and this may be more of a nature of the addition, is that the requirements for putting together a team only required that each player bring a legal detachment. There was no restrictions on what forces could partner and ally with each other. Now, of course, like auras and buffs and things like that only work on what the auras and buffs work on. So there was no cross sharing of things that would not normally be shared. But I saw a lot of players just bringing whatever they wanted. You know, you had Space Marines and Necrons and Eldari and Orcs all allying together, in my opinion, somewhat consistently throughout the event. And that has not been something that has been that prevalent at that event. Did it seem to slow the event down? Nope. Did not. Did it seem to make people have a bad time? Nope, absolutely not. How did I feel about it? I'd like to see more team concepts more apparent in that event.
Sure.
But that's one person's opinion.
Like you said, I mean, in the year that I went, I got to hang out with the awesome guys and their team, and they ended up winning the Spirit Award, and they had four Tau armies that were all themed and put together, and it was this like Viking theme, and it was amazing, and they totally deserved it when they won. And it was I could see where if they've gotten away from that and it's not as rewarding for all the effort that team put in, I could see where you know your position.
The other side of it is, though, is that they still award for best, you know, like loyalist or imperial, heretical, and Xenos and that kind of stuff. So, you know, if their points system takes care of that or whatever, and, you know, what's in my business is not. And also on the other side of it is if that encourages more people to come and participate and join in this awesome event, then that's cool too. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's a little bit different than what I'm used to seeing. But I will say that the fun and the spirit of the event was not compromised in the slightest.
Sure.
And just seeing the smiling faces and walking around, like there was no end of tables and teams that we could have picked to come on the stream. It was very difficult choosing who went on the stream because everyone was worthy. You know, like tons and tons of folks that fit all the criteria, you know, seemed to have an awesome looking army and were enthusiastic about playing. So, you know, it was cool to host so many people and have so many choices. So, you know, again, the event was amazing. And I'm just saying, as a longtime veteran of the event, that's the only thing. My only critique is like, well, I guess more people just brought the armies they wanted to play. Mm. So what is, that doesn't mean anything, right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, what I, my opinion doesn't mean anything.
Fair.
So, but as just as you know, maybe the times are changing. Maybe the edition does lend itself to more. The only thing that combined were the command points. Like the players shared a command point pool, and they would generate two instead of one because there's two of them. Mm. That's one of the things you have to plan for when you're building your list is what are the variables.
Mm-hmm.
And I think finding a combination of factions that where one barely needs their command points and the other is extremely command point thirsty,
mm-hmm.
it might be on to something for next year. Just thinking out loud.
Sure.
But the strings are great. Hanging out with Adam was great. Talking about Warhammer for the whole weekend, of course, was great. We've got Tech Priest Werner and Servo Skull Alex in the background, which makes doing this just a breeze.
Nice.
Yeah, I had Andy Talbot from Games Workshop helping us out with the Age of Sigmar portion of it.
That's awesome. He's done that before, right?
He has. Yeah. He's real good. Real good. Knows his stuff and also enjoys talking about Warhammer and helps me out with some of the factions I don't get the opportunity to interact with that much.
Yeah.
So that was nice. I do kind of encourage if anyone, you know, wants to fill time while they're at work or painting or whatever, you know, kick on the stream, see what you think. We do try to talk about some of the aspects of the game as well. And then had that great chat community. Like it's really cool to see people come and hang out like for the duration.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to be there and helping them keep it us as interested as hopefully we are with them. So what's next for you?
Man, I gotta move. I mean, as much as I'm just saying, you know, what's next? Don't worry, they're within reach, but most of my armies right now are packed up. I'm getting ready. I've loved my time out here in West Texas in El Paso. I'm getting ready to move to back to Georgia. So I'm going to be within driving range of you. I mean, I'm within driving range now, but it'll take me about an hour and a half to get to you, maybe adding traffic.
Instead of 14 hours or 18 hours?
Come on now. No, about 21 to 24.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Texas is a big state. Once you drive across it a few times, you realize that it's quite the drive. But all that to say, I'm working in the future here at Fort Moore down there in Columbus, Georgia. So I'm pretty excited for the next little chapter in my profession. And with that, it's going to be really awesome to be back home and see a lot of the folks that I've missed while I've been away. And I'm looking forward to getting some games when I get there. But with that, you know, there's some things. We'll see how time goes. I've got some really cool stuff if it works out. Some traveling that I might be able to work, but I don't want to get too excited just because I as much as I hate missing the show these last couple weeks, I'm going to be doing some training in May and June that's going to have me off the net probably for a little bit. So I'll make sure, you know, I'll be on a couple more times before then, but just comes with the job sometimes. So a lot more than you asked for, but that's what's next for me, Paul. What about you?
No, it's, and then you know, like the whole stress of having to move.
You know, you do it. I've been doing this now since 2005. So, you know, it's, I'm all right. I've done this a couple times. Doesn't necessarily become super easy, but you do just kind of know what you're expecting and going through. So
still good luck with all that. And I do look forward to being you, having you closer so we can jam some games.
It's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
What's next for me is I'm building some Death Guard with their various weapon options. They can take a lot of weapons. Nice. Currently.
Yeah. I've heard that. It's good.
And there's kind of some theory about should you build them tailored more towards close combat or do you go more towards shooting stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't quite decided, so I'm building all the options using various kit bashes from starter set Marines and the actual Plague Marine kit.
I like it.
So
sounds
we'll see,
good.
We'll see where it goes. Yeah, you know, breaking out some bits, see how it goes. I mean, we all have some bits. At least I assume we have some bits. If you're listening to the show this deep into it, you probably have some bits later on. That's my but, you know, breaking them out and trying to get all the various special weapons and options in whatever configuration that I feel like I want. Because, you know, there's an idea that you take the character that lets you fight first, which is cool. And I do like that, but there's some other options too, to get some maybe better shooting. And I think that they kind of stand up well enough on their own in close combat, and the shooting's probably better. But that's just my theory right now. When I get some games in and see,
Sure.
but I'll have all the options just in case. Well, that's our show this week. Red, has been a pleasure talking with you.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Thanks for bringing me back on. Can't wait for the next one.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see everybody next week.
Take care, everybody.
The Sept Tenets demand you tune in next week. For the greater good, of course.